His hands looked young, not gnarled or bent, his fingers slender. Maris often wondered how the brothers aged and how long they lived, but that information was secret to their order.
There's little more powerful than the love of family, but what I do not know is why you choose to show this to me.
Maris took a shuddering breath. I know I should show it to the Clave, she said. But the Clave knows of his bond with Jonathan now. They are hunting them both. They will kill Jace if they find him. And yet to keep it to myself is surely treason. She hung her head. I decided that telling you, the brothers, was something I could bear. Then it is your choice whether to show it to the Clave. I can't stand that it be mine.
Zachariah was silent a long moment. Then his voice, gentle in her head, said,
Your map tells you that your son is still alive. If you give it to the Clave, I do not think it will help them much, besides telling them that he is traveling fast and is impossible to track. They know that already. You keep the map. I will not speak of it for now.
Maris looked at him in astonishment. But you are a servant of the Clave.
I was once a shadow hunter like you. I lived like you do. And like you, there were those I loved enough to put their welfare before anything else, any oath, any debt.
Did you? Maris hesitated. Did you ever have children?
No. No children.
I'm sorry.
Do not be, and try not to let fear for Jace devour you. He is a Herondale, and they are survivors.
Something snapped inside Maris. He is not a Herondale. He is a Lightwood. Jace Lightwood. He's my son. There was a long pause. Then,
I did not mean to imply otherwise.
Said Brother Zachariah. He unclasped his thin hands and stepped back.
There is one thing you must be aware of. If Jace appears on the map for more than a few seconds at a time, you will have to tell the Clave. You should brace yourself for the possibility.
I don't think I can, she said. They'll send hunters after him, set a trap for him. He's just a boy.
He was never just a boy,
said Zachariah, and he turned to glide from the room. Maris did not watch him go. She had returned to staring at the map.
Simon?
Relief opened like a flower in his chest. Clary's voice, tentative but familiar, filled his head. He looked sideways. Isabel was still sleeping. Midday light was visible around the edges of the curtains.
Are you awake?
He rolled onto his back, stared up at the ceiling.
Of course I'm awake. Well, I wasn't sure. You're what, 6, 7 hours behind where I am? It's twilight here.
Italy?
We're in Prague now. It's pretty. There's a big river and a lot of buildings with spires. Looks a little like Idris from a distance. It's cold here, though. Colder than at home.
Okay, enough with the weather report. Are you safe? Where are Sebastian and Jace?
They're with me.
I wandered off a little, though. I said I wanted to commune with the view from the bridge.
So I'm the view from the bridge?
She laughed, or at least he felt something that was like laughter in his head. A soft, nervous laughter.
I can't take too long, though they don't really seem to suspect anything. Jace definitely doesn't. Sebastian is harder to read. I don't think he trusts me. I searched his room yesterday, but there's nothing. I mean, nothing to indicate what they're planning. Last night? Nothing.
It was odd how she could be inside his head and he could still sense that she was hiding something.
Sebastian has in his room the box my mom used to own, with his baby stuff in it. I can't figure out why. Don't waste your time trying to figure out Sebastian, Simon told her. He's not worth it. Figure out what they're going to do.
I'm trying,
she sounded irritable.
Are you still at Magnus's?
Yeah. We moved to phase two of our plan.
Oh, yeah? What was phase one?
Phase one was sitting around the table, ordering pizza, and arguing.
What's phase two?
Sitting around the table, drinking coffee, and arguing?
Not exactly.
Simon took a deep breath.
We raised the demon Azazel.
Azazel? Her mental voice spiked upward. Simon almost clutched at his ears.
So that's what the stupid Smurf question was about.
Tell me you're kidding.
I'm not. It's a long story.
He filled her in as best he could, watching Isabel breathe as she did, watching the light outside the window grow brighter.
We thought he could help us find a weapon that can hurt Sebastian without hurting Jace.
Yeah, but demon raising? Clary didn't sound convinced.
And Azazel is no ordinary demon.
I'm the one with Team Evil over here. You're Team Good. Keep it in mind.
You know nothing's that simple, Clary.
It was as if he could feel her sigh, a breath of air that passed over his skin, raising the hairs on the back of his neck.
I know.
Cities and rivers, Clary thought, as she took her fingers from the gold ring on her right hand and turned away from the view of the Charles Bridge back to Jace and Sebastian. They were on the other side of the old stone bridge, pointing off at something she couldn't see. The water below was the color of metal, sliding soundlessly around the bridge's ancient struts. The sky was the same color, pocked with black clouds. The wind whipped at her hair and coat as she walked over to join Sebastian and Jace. They all set off again, the two boys conversing softly. She could have joined the conversation if she wanted to, she supposed, but there was something about the still loveliness of the city, its spires rising into the mist in the distance, that made her want to be quiet, to look, and to think on her own. The bridge emptied out into a twisting cobblestone street lined with tourist shops, shops selling blood-red garnets and big chunks of golden Polish amber, heavy bohemian glass, and wooden toys. Even at this hour, touts stood outside nightclubs, holding free passes or cards that would give you discounts on drinks. Sebastian gestured them aside impatiently, snapping his annoyance in check. The press of people was relieved when the street widened into an old medieval square. Despite the cold weather, it was filled with milling pedestrians and kiosks were selling sausages and hot spiced cider. The three of them stopped for food and ate around a tall rickety table while the huge astronomical clock in the square's center began to chime the hour. Clanking machinery started up, and a circle of dancing wooden figures appeared from doors on either side of the clock. The 12 apostles, Sebastian explained, as the figures whirled around and around. There's a legend, he said, leaning forward with his hands cupped around a mug of hot cider, that the king had the eyes of the clockmaker put out after this clock was finished, so he could never build anything as beautiful again. Clary shuddered and moved a little closer to Jace. He had been quiet since they'd left the bridge, as if lost in thought. People, girls mainly, stopped to look at him as they passed, his hair bright and startling among the winter dark colors of the old square.
That's sadistic, she said.
Sebastian ran his finger around the rim of his mug and licked the cider off. The past is another country.
Foreign country, said Jace.
Sebastian looked at him with lazy eyes.
What?
The past is a foreign country. They do things differently there, Jace said. That's the whole quote. Sebastian shrugged and pushed his mug away. You got a euro for returning them to the stand where you bought the cider. But Clary suspected Sebastian couldn't be bothered to fake good citizenship for a measly euro.
Let's go.
Clary wasn't finished with her cider.
but she set it down anyway and followed as Sebastian led them away from the square among a maze of narrow, twisting streets. Jace had corrected Sebastian, she thought. Certainly it had been over something minor, but wasn't Lilith's blood magic supposed to bind him to her brother in such a way that he thought everything Sebastian did was right? Could this be a sign, even a tiny sign, that the spell that connected them was starting to fade? It was stupid to hope, she knew, but sometimes hope was all you had. The streets grew narrower, darker. The clouds overhead had completely blocked out the lowering sun, and old-fashioned gas lamps burned here and there, illuminating the misty dimness. The streets had turned to cobblestones, and the sidewalks were narrowing, forcing them to walk in a line, as if they were picking their way across a narrow bridge. Only the sight of other pedestrians appearing and disappearing out of the fog made Clary feel that she had not stepped through some sort of warp in time into a dream city out of her own imagination. Finally, they reached an archway of stone that opened out into a small square. Most of the stores had turned off their lights, though across from them one was lit up. It said Antique Variet in gold letters, and the window was full of old display bottles of different substances, their peeling labels marked in Latin. Clary was surprised when Sebastian headed toward it. What use could they possibly have for old bottles? She dismissed the thought when they stepped over the threshold. The store inside was dimly lit and smelled of mothballs, but it was stuffed, every cranny, with an incredible selection of junk and not junk. Beautiful celestial maps warred for space with salt and pepper shakers shaped like the figures in the clock in the old town square. There were heaps of old tobacco and cigar tins, stamps mounted in glass, old cameras of East German and Russian design, a gorgeous cut glass bowl in a deep emerald shade sitting side by side with a stack of water-stained old calendars. An antique Czech flag hung from a mounting pole overhead. Sebastian moved forward through the stacks toward a counter in the back of the store, and Clary realized that what she had taken for a mannequin was in fact an old man, with a face as creased and wrinkled as an old bedsheet, leaning back against the counter with his arms crossed. The counter itself was glass-fronted and held heaps of vintage jewelry and sparkling glass beads, small chain purses with gem clasps, and rows of cufflinks. Sebastian said something in Czech, and the man nodded and indicated Clary and Jace with a jerk of his chin and a suspicious look. His eyes were, Clary saw, a dark red color. She narrowed her own eyes, concentrating hard, and began to strip the glamour from him. It wasn't easy. It seemed to stick to him like flypaper. In the end, she managed to pull it away only enough to see in flashes the real creature standing in front of her. Tall and human-shaped, with gray skin and ruby-red eyes, a mouth full of pointed teeth that jutted every which way, and long, serpentine arms that ended in heads like an eel's. Narrow, evil-looking, and toothy. "A Vetus demon," Jace muttered in her ear. "They're like dragons. They like to stockpile sparkly things. Junk, jewels, it's all the same to them." Sebastian was looking back over his shoulder at Jason Clary. "They're my brother and sister," he said after a moment. "They are entirely to be trusted, Nerik." A faint shudder ran under Clary's skin. She didn't like the idea of posing as Jace's sister, even for a demon's benefit. "I don't like this," the Vetus demon said. "You said we would be dealing only with you, Morgan Stern. And while I know Valentine had a daughter..." His head dipped toward Clary. "I also know we had only one son."
"He's adopted," said Sebastian breezily, gesturing toward Jace.
"Adopted?"
"I think you'll find the definition of the modern family is really changing at an impressive pace these days," said Jace. The demon, Mirik, didn't look impressed.
I don't like this, he said again.
But you'll like this, said Sebastian, taking a pouch tied at the top from his pocket. He turned it upside down above the counter, and a clattering pile of bronze coins fell out, clinking together as they rolled across the glass. Pennies from dead men's eyes, 100 of them. Now, do you have what we agreed on? One toothed hand felt its way across the counter and bit gently at a coin. The demon's red eyes flickered over the pile.
That is all very well, but it is not enough to buy what you seek.
He gestured with an undulating arm, and above it appeared what looked to Clary like a hunk of rock crystal, only it was more luminous, more sheer, silvery, and beautiful. She realized with a jolt that it was the stuff seraph blades were made from.
Pure adamas, Merrick said. The stuff of heaven. Priceless.
Anger crackled across Sebastian's face like lightning, and for a moment Clary saw the vicious boy underneath, the one who had laughed while Hodge lay dying. Then the look was gone. But we agreed on a price.
We also agreed you would come alone, said Merrick.
His red eyes returned to Clary and to Jace, who hadn't moved but whose aspect had taken on the controlled stillness of a crouching cat's.
I'll tell you what else you can give me, he said. A lock of your sister's pretty hair.
Fine, Clary said, stepping forward. You want a snip of my hair?
No.
Jace moved to block her. He's a dark magician, Clary. You have no idea what he could do with a lock of your hair or a bit of blood.
Merrick,
Sebastian said slowly, not looking at Clary. And in that moment, she wondered, if Sebastian wanted to trade a lock of her hair for the Adamas, what was to stop him? Jace had objected, but he was also compelled to do what Sebastian asked of him. In the crunch, what would win out? The compulsion or Jace's feelings for her?
Absolutely not.
The demon blinked a slow, lizard-like blink.
Absolutely not.
You will not touch a hair on my sister's head, said Sebastian, nor will you renege on our bargain. No one cheats Valentine Morgenstern's son. The agreed-upon price, or...
Or what? Merrick snarled. Or I'll be sorry. You are not Valentine, little boy. Now, that was a man who inspired loyalty.
No, said Sebastian, sliding a seraph blade from the belt at his waist. I am not Valentine. I do not intend to deal with demons as Valentine did. If I cannot have your loyalty, I will have your fear. Know that I am more powerful than my father ever was, and if you do not deal fairly with me, I will take your life and have what I have come for. He raised the blade he held.
Duma, he whispered, and the blade shot forth, shimmering like a column of fire.
The demon recoiled, snapping several words in a muddy-sounding language. Jace's hand already had a dagger in it. He called out to Clary, but not fast enough. Something struck her hard on the shoulder, and she fell forward, sprawling on the cluttered floor. She flipped over onto her back, fast, looked up, and screamed. Looming over her was a massive snake, or at least it had a thick, scaled body and a head hooded like a cobra's. But its body was jointed, insectile, with a dozen skittering legs that ended in jagged claws. Clary fumbled for her weapons belt as the creature reared back, yellow venom dripping from its fangs, and struck. Simon had fallen back asleep after speaking with Clary. When he awoke again, the lights were on, and Isabel knelt on the edge of the bed, wearing jeans and a worn t-shirt she must have borrowed from Alec. It had holes in the sleeves, and the stitching around the hem was coming undone. She had the collar pulled away from her throat and was using the tip of a steely to trace a rune onto the skin of her chest, just below her collarbone. He raised himself up on his elbows.
"What are you doing?"
"Irazi," she said, "for this." She tucked her hair back behind her ear, and he saw the two puncture wounds he'd made in the side of her throat. As she finished the rune, they smoothed over, leaving only the faintest white flecks behind.
"Are you all right?"
His voice came out in a whisper, smooth. He was trying to bite back the other questions he wanted to ask.
"Did I hurt you? Do you think I'm a monster now? Have I creeped you out completely?"
"I'm fine. I slept a lot later than I normally ever do, but I think that's probably a good thing." Seeing his expression, Isabel slid her steely into her belt. She crawled toward Simon with a cat-like grace and positioned herself over him, her hair falling down around them. They were so close their noses touched. She looked at him unblinkingly.
"Why are you so crazy?" she said.
And he could feel her breath against his face, as soft as a whisper. He wanted to pull her down and kiss her. Not bite her, just kiss her. But at that exact moment, the apartment door buzzer sounded. A second later, someone knocked on the bedroom door, banged on it really, making it shake on its hinges. "Simon! Isabel!" It was Magnus. "Look, I don't care if you're asleep or doing unspeakable things to each other. Get dressed and come out into the living room. Now." Simon locked gazes with Isabel, who looked as puzzled as he did. "What's going on?"
"Just get out here," Magnus said, and the sound of his retreating feet was loud as he stalked away from their room.
Isabel rolled off Simon, much to his disappointment, and sighed.
"What do you think it is?"
"No idea," said Simon. "Emergency meeting of Team Good, I guess." He'd found the phrase amusing when Clary had used it. Isabel, though, just shook her head and sighed.
"I'm not sure there is any such thing as Team Good these days," she said.
Chapter 13. The Bone Chandelier. As the serpent's head drove down toward Clary, a shining blur slashed across it, almost blinding her. A seraph blade, its shimmering knife edge slicing the demon's head cleanly off. The head crumpled, spraying venom and ichor. Clary rolled to one side, but some of the toxic substance splattered onto her torso. The demon vanished before its two halves could strike the floor. Clary bit down on her cry of pain and moved to get to her feet. A hand was suddenly thrust into her field of vision and offered to pull her to her feet.
"Jace," she thought.
But as she looked up, she realized she was staring at her brother.
"Come on," said Sebastian, his hand still out. "There are more of them."
She grabbed his hand and let him lift her to her feet. He was splattered with demon blood too, blackish-green stuff that burned where it touched, leaving scorched patches on his clothing. As she stared at him, one of the snake-headed things, elapid demons, she realized belatedly, remembering an illustration in a book, reared up behind him, its neck flattening out like a cobra's. Without thinking, Clary grabbed his shoulder and shoved him out of the way, hard. He staggered back as the demon struck, and Clary rose to meet it with the dagger she had yanked from her belt. She turned her body aside as she drove the dagger home, avoiding the creature's fangs. Its hiss turned to a gurgle as the blade sank in and she dragged it down, gutting the creature open the way someone might gut a fish. Burning demon blood exploded over her hand in a hot torrent. She screamed but kept her grip on the dagger as the elapid winked out of existence. She whirled around. Sebastian was fighting another of the elapids by the door of the shop. Jace was fending off two next to a display of antique ceramics. Shards of pottery littered the floor. Clary swung her arm back and threw the dagger, as Jace had taught her to. It soared through the air and struck one of the creatures in the side, sending it jittering and squeaking away from Jace. Jace whirled around and, seeing her, winked before reaching up to scissor off the head of the remaining illipid demon. Its body collapsed as it vanished, and Jace, splattered in black blood,
grinned. A surge of something went through Clary, a sense of buzzing elation. Both Jace and Isabel had spoken to her of the high of battle, but she'd never really experienced it before. Now she did. She felt all-powerful, her veins humming, strength uncoiling from the base of her spine. Everything seemed to have slowed down around her. She watched as the injured Elipid demon spun and turned on her, racing toward her on its insectile feet, lips already curling back from its fangs. She stepped back, yanked the antique flag from its mounting place on the wall, and slammed the end of it into the Elipid's open, gaping mouth. The pole punched out through the back of the creature's skull, and the Elipid disappeared, taking the flag with it. Clary laughed out loud. Sebastian, who had just finished off another demon, swung around at the noise, and his eyes widened. "Clary, stop him!" he shouted, and she spun around to see Mirik, his hands fumbling at a door set into the back of the shop. She broke into a run, yanking the Seraph blade from the belt as she went. "Nakir!" she cried, vaulting up onto the counter, and she flung herself from the top of it as her weapon exploded into brightness. She landed on the Vetus demon, knocking him to the ground. One of his eel-like arms snapped at her, and she sliced it off with a sawing motion of her blade. More black blood sprayed. The demon looked at her with red, frightened eyes. "Stop!" he wheezed. "I could give you whatever you want." "I have everything I want," she whispered, and drove her Seraph blade down. It plunged into the demon's chest, and Mirik disappeared with a hollow cry. Clary thumped to her knees on the carpet. A moment later, two heads appeared over the side of the counter, staring down at her. One golden blonde and one silver blonde. Jace and Sebastian. Jace was wide-eyed. Sebastian looked pale. "Name of the angel, Clary," he breathed. "The Adamus." "Oh, that stuff you wanted? It's right here." It had rolled partly under the counter. Clary held it up now, a luminous chunk of silver, smeared where her bloody hands had touched it. Sebastian swore with relief and grabbed the Adamus out of her hand as Jace vaulted over the counter in a single movement and landed beside Clary. He knelt down and pulled her close, running his hands over her, his eyes dark with concern. She caught at his wrists. "I'm all right," she said. Her heart was pounding, her blood still singing in her veins. He opened his mouth to say something, but she leaned forward and put her hands on either side of his face, her nails digging in. "I feel good." She looked at him, rumpled and sweaty and bloody as he was, and wanted to kiss him. She wanted... "All right, you two," said Sebastian. Clary pulled away from Jace and glanced up at her brother. He was grinning down at them, lazily spinning the Adamus in one hand. "Tomorrow we use this," he said, nodding toward it. "But tonight, once we're cleaned up a little, we celebrate." Simon padded barefoot out into the living room, Isabel behind him, to find a surprising tableau. The circle and the pentagram in the center of the floor were shining with a bright silver light, like mercury. Smoke rose from the center of it, a tall black-red column tipped with white. The whole room smelled of burning. Magnus and Alex stood outside the circle, and with them, Jordan and Maya, who, given the coats and hats they were wearing, looked as if they had just arrived. "What's going on?" Isabel asked, stretching her long limbs with a yawn. "Why is everyone watching the pentagram channel?" "Just hang on a second," Alex said grimly. "You'll see." Isabel shrugged and added her gaze to the others. As everyone watched, the white smoke began to swirl, fast and then faster, a mini-tornado that tore across the center of the pentagram, leaving words behind it spelled out in scorch marks. "Have you made your decision yet?" "Huh," Simon said. "Has it been doing that all morning?" Magnus threw his arms up. He was wearing leather pants and a shirt with a zigzag metallic lightning bolt on it. All night, too.